Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It with Scott and Maria.
It is so hard to put down that trumpet, man. I love playing that solo.
We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number at the station, give us a call at 337-8874.
Operators are standing by. We take MasterCard, American Express, and all other major credit cards.
Yes.
Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness. We're here with Oscar Aguilar. He's an MSW. He works as a...
Good morning.
Yes. And good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. So we're going to talk about behavioral health stuff today, because you're a behavioral health guy, right?
Yes. Six years running.
Whoa. How was that for you?
Good. Six and a half.
Yeah. Are you home? Is this your...
Yes, why not?
Are you building like a little career foundation thing here?
Yep.
Nice. Welcome over.
Thank you.
So what program do you work with now, and what are we going to talk about?
Well, I've been at the prevention and early intervention program for the last 2 years now. So that's what I've been dedicated to full-time.
Now, prevention and early intervention, is that kind of a new mental health flavor, or is that something that's been around forever? Or?
No, it's fairly new. It's fairly new, 2 years running. I'm pretty sure it was planned way beforehand, but it's been running already for the past 2 years.
And so they must be aiming at somebody that the old stuff didn't aim at.
Right.
Who are they aiming at?
So they're aiming at the clients that have been exposed to some type of trauma, some type of significant stressor in their life. However, the only difference between PEI clients and our regular clinic clients at behavioral health is that the severity levels as far as their impairments and functioning is very minimal or no impairment. You know, that's the only criteria for the PEI program. So it's all these children, adolescents that did not meet the criteria for behavioral health, so they could be treated at PEI.
So the people that you see in this prevention early intervention program are children, youth, I guess,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That have come to you from the behavioral health system as people who have been exposed to either some sort of single trauma or series of stressors, but aren't quite diagnosable or something? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, the impairments aren't as severe to require.
What kind of events could that have led to? Something. Give me some examples. So.
Yeah, I'll give you some examples right now, Maria, but I want to go back. Most of our clients, they come from as referrals from the schools. From
okay,
the
yeah, yeah, it's kind of where
yeah,
I was going.
Yeah, not necessarily from our clinics.
So most of them don't come down from the clinics. Most of them come up from out of the general population.
Out of the general population, yes, exactly.
Okay.
But the different events or situations that bring clients to the PEI program, they're pretty general things. I mean, it just depends on how that particular client or that particular family handles stressors in general. If they have been exposed to some type of traumatic event, you know, like child abuse or car accident, or even there was a lot of referrals after the earthquake a year and a half ago.
That was pretty intense. I don't know about you.
There was a lot of referrals.
That was crazy.
Really?
Yeah, regarding that.
I had my 4-year-old go back to school the next day. You're going back to school.
My daughter is asking for more earthquakes. She's like, Dad, where'd the earthquakes go? You know, I miss them.
Oh,
I'm like, stop.
No, and actually that's what I was, you know, just normalize it. You know, that there was my cousin's little girl. She was terrified for about a couple of weeks after the earthquake.
Right.
But, you know, my daughter also, you know, is it going to shake? I don't know, but you're still going to school.
No, man.
Now, you know, earthquakes is a good example of something that's kind of local phenomena, I guess,
right.
A local phenomena stressor. Are there other things that happen locally that might be considered stressors that would bring people in that, you know, may not be happening somewhere else in the world but happen here? I don't know. For example, we have lots of poverty. Do you see poverty as being a stressor on families sometimes?
Yeah, definitely, especially nowadays with the countries or even the world economy. You know,
I thought you were
going to
say the power outage.
Oh, there you go. Case in point.
Yeah, maybe the power outage.
Well, no, we have like 30% unemployment. It's always been tough here economically.
Oh, yeah, financial stressors, yeah, definitely, especially nowadays.
And
which creates even more problems because it just trickles down, you know, to like maybe conflict between the couples.
Yeah, that's
kind of
what I was
thinking. Trickles down to the children and things like that, so...
What about, we live close to the borders, and even those of us who aren't immigrants have to experience the...
You're an immigrant somehow or another.
Yeah.
We're all immigrants.
14th generation. So I'm almost indigenous. But everybody who's here, regardless of their immigration status, let's say it that way, experiences driving through border checkpoints, or if you're crossing over to Mexico, experiences border crossings. Is that a stressor that actually shows up in your clinic, or is that something that people really don't cop to?
No.
Where our conversation was
not
going.
General, not in general, unless there has been some event that has happened either to this child or to the child's family regarding being in Mexico, because I've had a couple of
deportations.
Deportations. Maybe a family member
traumatic
murdered or things like that in Mexico. Maybe they were assaulted. Maybe they were kidnapped. Things like that. But coming back.
It's gonna happen. It will happen.
So you've got mostly the schools sending in these prevention and early intervention children. What kind of stuff tips them off that this may be a kid who might benefit from your services?
Well, I believe just changes in behavior, changes in academic performance, maybe in changes in their emotional well-being. So any type of change that the teachers, that the principal notices, you know, that it's not, you know, typical of this particular child. You know, then that would warrant, you know, maybe a little bit of exploration by the school counselor or the school psychologist, and then that's when they refer to our program.
So basically, mm-hmm. the schools would be in touch with their children, kind of how they act, how they react to stuff, the
right.
quality of their work, etc.
Right.
And if they saw some diversion from that, some change.
Right.
Then one of the things that could be causing that change is some sort of stressor.
Some sort of stressor or a traumatic event in their lives. And, of course, what's pretty serious nowadays is of course, you know, bullying, you know, victims of bullying. And we've
cyberbullying.
Yeah, cyberbullying or even...
Or even the regular old-fashioned, plain, old-school, old-school
bullying.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so, yeah, we've had some cases like that. And
do you actually have any lunch money?
No lunch money.
I'll talk to you in the break here.
They don't give lunch money now. They have the little card.
Really?
Little cards and numbers.
Debit cards.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So give me your debit card.
Yeah, so we've in the past 2 years that we've been running this program, we've seen...
You weren't going to eat those French fries, were you?
Yeah, we've seen different types of cases. And at times we've seen like pretty severe events in the lives of a particular child, but that they're handling it well, they're managing well, they're coping well, and that all falls on the parental or the family support system. You know, they have a pretty good base of support. So we might have a case that it's something minimal that we might consider minimal, you know, parental separation or things like that, and they're having this great difficult time. But
death
that
of a
all,
pet, mm-hmm. I can imagine.
Yeah, death of a pet, something like that.
So what you're saying is we can't really look at the event as saying, you know, this type of event meets criteria for a child to be referred.
It's,
you know,
the behavior.
A death or something else.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism that they're using.
So it's not the strength mm-hmm. of the event, it's how that person, the child, perceives the event.
Right.
And then their coping skills, I guess.
Right. And, of course, we're using the TFCBT model, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy.
To find something.
Trauma-focused.
Yes, trauma-focused.
Well, we could touch a little, but how do you guys go out to the schools and give them, like, coach them or give them sort of cheat sheet?
Or do you go to the homes or?
For actual treatment?
Well, I was thinking more just in terms of making sure that the people who need to get referred get referred.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any kind of
there's a particular
outreach, I guess?
There's a referral form that is distributed to the different schools. And right there's the type of events that could qualify a child for services.
How sure are you that classroom by classroom, teachers are aware, A, that you exist, be that, you know, this type of behavioral set isn't just developmentally normal or isn't just, you know, well, they saw a scary movie, it's Halloween week. How fine-tuned are your eyes and ears in the community? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Right. Well, from the standpoint of each particular school, I mean, we've done the outreach, and other staff members have done outreach as well. So I think that is just up to the particular school, to the principal, you know, to distribute that information. You know, maybe.
Okay, so there was something at least in place that
right.
Or ongoing.
Right. And then last year also we were doing some prevention treatment.
If schools wanted like a booster shot, an inoculation of training on the signs and symptoms that may warrant a referral for prevention early intervention related to trauma, they could call you up and you'd hook them up or what?
Well, we haven't done that yet, but...
hey, that's a good one, Scott.
But yeah, like I said, we have done some outreach out there.
Well, yeah, because it just kind of cohesively seems like your eyes and ears should mm-hmm. be, you know, like your eyes and ears, only their eyes and ears.
Right.
But going back, once treatment is, or when the services are provided, is it at the school side, or is it at the clinic, or is it at home?
No, it's a community-based program, so we go to the client.
Okay.
If it's at home with the parent, or at school with the client, so.
Now, someone under the influence of trauma, that's kind of an interesting way of saying it, but someone under the influence of trauma, is it fairly obvious? I mean, for the people who really are impacted by this. Not just somebody who had something bad happen to them, but somebody who had something bad happen to them and they took it really bad. So somebody who's suffering from trauma, I guess.
I'm pretty sure it's obvious.
What kind of stuff do you see? What kind of stuff would we notice?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, it's behavioral changes, it's emotional changes, even perceptual changes as well.
Temper tantrums, or I mean, behavioral. Tantrums. Let's start with behavioral changes. What kind of behavior?
It could be defiance. Talking back behaviors,
sad stuff, crying.
Yeah, it could be that.
Hiding,
too.
That's gonna affect the grades too.
School. More anxiety, more
fetal
worry.
Position under the bed kind of stuff.
It could be, yeah.
So lots of behavioral changes.
Sleeping and eating patterns have changed, things like that.
What about say academic performance?
Mm-hmm.
What would you expect to see?
Yeah, academic performance would most likely decrease unless it's a child that kind of wants to like take refuge in their academics and just concentrate on academics and
so not just going down, but
no,
it could go.
It could go up because some children have been exposed to some children that have been like that, but they've forgotten about all the
everything
other stuff.
Else.
Yeah, family, social life, friends, and video games and things like that.
Is there a belief somehow inside the kid that if I'm okay and I can demonstrate okay, then it really is okay? I mean, is it kind of like wishful thinking?
Yeah, it could be. It could be something like that, yeah.
Okay. But generally speaking, kids who are under the influence of trauma, it would be pretty distracting and it would mess their school stuff up.
Their sleeping pattern, definitely. Everything.
Appetite. So parents could be noticing this too.
Oh, yeah.
And parents may even be more aware of what went on in the child's life. Now could academics itself be the source of trauma?
Actually, maybe academic stressors.
All of a sudden, if you have a student that gets A's, all of a sudden they got a B.
Or Scott, you know, you haven't brought your homework again. You're going to have to go back to the wall again. I don't know, maybe even chronic pervasive failure.
Or for children that have like a perfectionist personality type, you know, that they're used to getting A's and B's.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they go into a higher grade and the work is a little bit more difficult. So they have a hard time, you know, completing all the requirements.
So for it to be traumatic, it would almost have to be somehow changing from normal, from whatever you'd habituated to.
Right.
So if you're used to failing, then if you're still failing, it's no big deal.
Right.
Still.
But if there's a change.
So you'd get discouraged and maybe depressed, but not necessarily traumatized, I guess.
Yeah, not necessarily traumatized.
Okay.
You know, maybe a little bit anxious. Maybe your sleeping patterns are affected.
So if you were bullied all the time, if bullying were so pervasive that it were just ubiquitous and it was all over the place, then you'd basically get used to it and it wouldn't come as trauma because it wouldn't be coming out of nowhere.
Well, in some instances,
it's kind of
scary.
Scary scenario, isn't it?
But it's pervasive. I believe that it is going to result in some type of depression, anxiety.
So if we can, I don't know, build a society where bullying is just inherent in everything we do and, you know, pull over to the side of the road, step out of the car, get in the cage, you know, whatever.
Okay, you're bringing the cage again.
then everybody will just consider that normal and it won't be, you know, traumatic.
Right. Well, for some people, but
it's gonna be traumatic for me if I ever.
Yeah, other people are gonna take it as traumatic, you know, because it all depends on how they've managed, you know, previous stressors, previous changes in their life.
Now, do we know anything about the frequency of traumatic reactions to traumatic events or traumatic traumatic reactions to any events? Do we know, like, if I look at 100 kids, do I know how many of those 100 kids are walking around impacted by trauma today?
No, most likely not. We, I mean, we
three,
don't focus on...
3, 6, 12, 9?
Well, somebody, well, that. I guess, yeah. Some kids are going to be able to cope well with the event.
But there should be some kind of etiology. I mean, there should be some sort of data set out there that suggests that out of every 100 kids,
we're
you've
not
got
statistics.
8, 9, 10...
Well, I mean, if we refer back to the earthquake, I mean, how many students do we have in Imperial Valley? And I'm pretty
thousands.
Sure a high percentage of those were exposed in some way to that earthquake.
And how many went to you?
Many came to us? How many came specifically? Oh, the earthquake rattled me and stuff like that. I'm very
right. Very
I,
few.
I bet
yeah,
you,
so
and I bet you we missed some.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Oh, yeah, and
I know amongst the adult population, I've got people that I know that I work with who, you know, we get like a little 3.3 earthquake.
That's
and
it.
They're like, their hair stands up straight on end. I'm right. Like, whoa, how'd you do that? No, they're terrified. They
yeah.
are terrified.
Yes. Yes, and they don't always, you know, seek mental health treatment for that. But our prevention and early intervention program, one of the nice things about it is that, you know, it's community-based. We make it very accessible, you know, to the community.
Isn't extreme stress, like, neurotoxic? Isn't it, like, really bad for you?
Stress is bad.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It affects your
well, especially
body,
when it spikes
health-wise.
Like that.
Right.
Ouch!
Yeah.
Ouch. So what we could, so I guess maybe you know we'll talk about trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. After the break, but it sounds like the word going into the break is that the more people that are aware of the impacts of this, the more they may seek a prevention. Type of service.
Yes, type of model. Yeah.
So that, you know, those kids don't grow up to be always frightened of earthquakes.
And right. The key here is parents and also teachers.
Yeah, or,
they're
or
the ones
always
that are
victims in the bullying game, you know. And we get some balance there.
Right.
Because I'm sure you're not getting everybody.
No.
First of all, I'm not sure everybody gets bullied. Come on. That's part of life. Right?
But now,
what's Maria say? Get over it. Go on.
Get over it. Go ahead.
No. No, but it bullying has gotten worse. It's constant now.
Yeah, with communication.
And kids are cruel.
With
kids
communication
be
being
mean.
Easier now, it's bullying has gotten easier.
Well, there's brand new creative bullying techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes,
I guess
that's what it is.
I guess. Well, you know, I still don't carry quarters in my pocket. No, I'm just kidding. Let's go to break. This is Let's Talk About It, Your Voice for Wellness here in Imperial County. We'll be back with Oscar Aguilar after the break. We'll talk about trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is their way of managing this early exposure to trauma. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Again, our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And if you're just tuning in, you, of course, missed the first half of the show, and we're not even going to go back and cover it. So you're going to have to catch the podcast on KXLRadio.com, which will be up, you know, in a couple of days. Because we did talk with Oscar Aguilar, Master of Social Work, working for Behavioral Health, about how to identify children who have been youth, who have been perhaps impacted by some sort of experience that may have caused some symptoms of trauma in them. And now we're going to jump right into how they work with those children. So, again, if you want to identify the kids, you got to go to the podcast. Huh.
Yes.
That'll teach them to turn in at 8 o'clock. Huh?
Yes.
Get those alarms clock set.
Well, going back, okay, Scott, you brought it up a couple of times about immigration and the cage and all that. No, and I was talking to Oscar before the show, my daughter will most likely be, I don't know, it could traumatize her. You know, I have the Sentry card. And you get the Sentry card through extensive background. You know, they check your background.
And you
they
only
do
have to renew
this.
It every 100 years. That's why it's
and,
called the Sentry card.
And even my husband doesn't even have one. But I do. And my daughter does. And one time I was coming through the sentry, and they sent me to secondary as a random thing. And, you know, they asked me, my daughter was sitting in the back, and I held her. You know, I got out of the car seat, and I was holding her, and I was standing next to the car until they checked in, and they let me go. Well, I passed again recently this past week through there. They didn't send me to secondary, but as I was passing by, I saw several people with kids in a cage. In a cage.
An adult-sized cage.
An adult-sized cage.
Wow.
Like how they put them in a, those the dogs?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a cage for adults and kids. As I guess they have to, with a bench in there, they have to wait in there until their car is searched. I mean, somehow or another, I mean, our liberties are being stomped on there. But, I mean, I if I get sent again to secondary and they do that randomly, and I'm there with, because I always cross with my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine my daughter being put through a cage right there? And I mean, first...
As an adult trying to explain that to
exactly,
your kid.
Exactly. First, for me, it's humiliating. Yeah. It's embarrassing. It's degrading. You know, I don't even have my dogs in a cage, okay? My dogs run freely.
Honey, this is one of those momentary inconveniences
but,
that
I
keeps
mean,
us all safe.
That's why we were asking about immigration, you know, the crossing. If there must be... I don't know. I would probably just... Why are we being put in a cage, a five-year-old? Saying this.
Right.
So I don't know if immigration knows that about our rights, or maybe if you're in immigration, our rights are thrown out the window.
Exactly. Right in that moment, I don't think you actually have any.
But at least they can help, you know, go ahead. I don't care. Search my car. That's not a problem. Go ahead and search it. But
you don't want to be in a cage too badly either.
No, but treat me with respect. Treat me, you know, with my... God,
like the taxpayer person I am paying your salary?
Exactly. No, it's right. Mm. I mean, I don't know. That was my thing.
You know, but it's like, it's you know. It's
so,
like
I don't know. The American Civil Liberties Union needs to get in touch with them.
The whole case.
Might just do a show.
I know. Huh? I'm going to have to contact them again.
You know, it's interesting. I think maybe that kind of leads you toward realizing that when you're a parent, I think you become a little bit more conscious of things that may be impacting kids. Well, first of all, your kid is impacted and you have to deal with that.
And right? How am I going to deal? The thing is, like, just like the earthquake, you know, it happened. And how did I deal with that so my daughter could also cope with it?
Yeah, how did you normalize
it? How did I normalize it? I told her she needed to go back to school the next day. What happened on a Sunday? And how do I deal with being put in a cage, first of all, I'm not going to like it. I'm going to be upset.
For you, that's worse than an earthquake.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm going to be upset. You know, is that going to also flow to my daughter? My daughter's probably going to be scared.
We have an expert here. Oscar, what do you think? Is it going to flow to her daughter?
What am I going to do? How can I do? Because
yes,
it might happen.
It's very common for children to notice how parents are reacting in like stressful situations like that.
So
situation as
so
well.
So they basically take their cue from us?
Yes, definitely.
And so if we're like freaked out by something, they're like freaked out. And they're even double freaked out because, mm-hmm. Oh my God, the
There's
person in charge is freaked out too.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and basically because they have that intuition, you could say, of protecting the parent, just like the parent has protected them throughout all these years, they have that inclination.
That's a heavy thing for a 4-year-old to have to grab onto, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, because it is going to be impacting, you know, for a child, you know, to see parents crying, parents all stressed, parents all angry. I mean, it's gonna trickle down to them, you know, somehow, some way, you know, emotionally or either behaviorally or perceptually as well.
Well, and I think I'm thinking to all the different kinds of families we have, and in some families, clearly the adults are always in charge of the moment. And those kids really rely on those adults
right.
to do that.
Right.
In other families, there may be little, you know, it may be a little more variable. And, you know, obviously in some really chaotic families, even the kid at the age of 4 may be the one that's basically in charge because nobody else is.
Right.
So it seems like that would, you know, that range of power and control would really impact who perceives something as traumatic and who doesn't.
So going to general questions, what is the average age group that you're seeing right now, or is it just all age groups?
All age groups. From the youngest I've had so far is a 4-year-old, and the oldest is an 18-year-old.
So what did you have to do with a 4-year-old? What was the issue?
I can't remember what the issue was. I believe it was a parental separation.
Mm.
Parental separation. So we really had to work very concretely with this child for him to grasp some of the information that mm-hmm. was provided to them.
Are birth through four somehow immune to trauma? That would be an interesting question, huh?
Right.
Or do we just, is it more difficult to notice in pre-verbal people or whatever?
Yeah, it's just more difficult to notice, but it is written and I guess in some studies that trauma could affect a child as young as being in the womb and things like that.
It's like last night I was watching Anderson Cooper, and there was this guy, older guy with beard. And he was taking that even for a child as young as 1 year old, you should swat them using a twig. Can you imagine? I mean, and that's what, I mean, they were going...
Not a mesquite twig, though, because they've got, like, spines on them.
No, yeah. And, I mean, that's traumatic. That little baby is going to... Why are you going to swat a little 1 year old? I don't even...
Yeah, hopefully they'll figure it out quickly.
I just said, oh, my gosh, you know, this is horrible. So I just changed the channel. But that could lead to trauma. Somebody, a baby that's been abused.
Yeah, but the parent that's spanking the one-year-old is not going to take that one-year-old in for prevention and early intervention for trauma that caused them.
No, they're going to continue, and then they're going to go to school, and then that's when
it's
going
to be noticeable.
The behaviors.
I used to be a teacher, and I could tell. You know how I could tell? Because if I raised my arm up around the kids, you could see who flinched.
Oh, wow.
And you go, oh, okay, that tells me something. It tells me to be careful raising my arms, first and foremost. Because I'm like a big person, so big people, when they raise their arms, they have to realize.
We both were refused to be teachers, Scott.
There you go. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're here with Oscar Aguilar. He's a master of social work, works for behavioral health, works with youth and children that are experienced or have experienced trauma. So you get these kids, and they roll on in, right, in masses, in droves, or whatever. Because life's really traumatic. No, you get whoever you get.
And they
meet the criteria to come on in. What kind of treatment can they expect to receive, and how does it work, and where do we go? And
A-plus treatment.
Give us
high
an insider's
quality.
View.
Yes. Well, we use trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. That's the model that we primarily implement.
And it's got the good housekeeping seal of therapy approval?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's evidence-based.
Through seals of CIMH and SAMHSA.
And you guys just don't throw that around. You actually follow a model?
Oh, yes.
And they check you to make sure you follow the model?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
we're being supervised.
Yeah, nice.
We have to report back to, a regional.
So you're not just winging it?
Definitely not.
You're cool enough to wing it. Come on, you're Oscar.
No, definitely not winging it. Because it's a pretty structured model. You know, first couple of sessions are psychoeducation on the particular stressor that brought them to our pay program. And I also like to include just general psychoeducation on other stressors and other types of abuse and trauma and things like that.
So it's a selected intervention for a selected problem.
Right.
Are you able to adapt culturally or age-wise to the different types of people who might walk in the door?
I think the whole model as a whole is pretty adaptable. To any culture, any age group, you know. Of course, the treatment isn't going to be the same for a teenager than it is for a 4 or 5 year old. I mean, you have to break down kind of like the words and some of the interventions that you might use.
Throw in some beats for the teenagers or something, right?
Yeah, with some kids, you have to be a little bit more active, you know, more activities. Mm-hmm. Other kids, you know, they like the
so there. That's where the talent or the skill of the therapist comes in being able to take that model
and modifying and to whatever fits the
yes.
client.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So first couple of sessions, psychoeducation. We also evaluate the quality of the parents' parenting skills and discipline and things like that.
So you get the parents also involved.
Yes, parents are also involved throughout the.
You mean there's actually
process.
A quality index to the job I'm doing? That's kind of scary, huh?
Yeah, so first couple of sessions.
Do you have, a self-scoring thing I could take home with me today and maybe figure out where I'm at?
Actually,
before
yes,
I start throwing around opinions on it or something?
Yeah. Yeah, so after psychoeducation. Oh, and also during the first couple of sessions, we do questionnaires and indexes to see where the client
is. Wait, psychoeducation, you teach them about trauma and its role and how it reacts in people?
Yes,
stuff,
and how it could affect people, you know, and we and also... It's also very important to normalize some of these reactions.
So, you know, your kid's now failing in school, and they're not sleeping at night, and they're tantruming. And lots of things could be causing that, but I think after we've talked this far, it looks like situation X really impacted this.
Right, right. Something like that.
And then sometime, you know, and basically proceeding onto that. And,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, so after psychoeducation, there's the relaxation intervention component.
Take us through relaxation.
Relaxation techniques.
Yeah.
Well, the primary ones are controlled breathing.
So you don't just yell at them and say, relax, get in the corner,
no,
and relax.
No, definitely not.
Immediately.
Definitely not.
Okay.
There's a process. Yeah, there's a process.
Well,
there's a rationale.
Walk us through it.
And things like that.
Give us
so,
an easy one.
Well, controlled breathing, that's, I mean, we have to have a video camera to demonstrate that. But controlled breathing is very useful. You could, like I tell
you
my,
didn't
my
know
clients,
we were live streaming this? Ooh. Oh,
no, we don't have, we're not that high tech.
Yeah. So controlled breathing, I tell the clients that they could use it anywhere they're at. They could be standing, walking, running. I mean, they could use controlled breathing. They could
is
use
but you
breathing
have to
slow
well,
deep breath or
the
what?
Thing
yeah,
is,
slow deep breath. You know,
you have to
the
modify it though also because of if you're dealing with a 4-year-old and 18-year-old, you modify the relaxation techniques.
Well, controlled breathing, it's. I think you could apply it. You could teach
for,
it to
for a
4-year-old. Yeah, you could teach it to
a 4-year-old. Probably easier because. You know, like babies, for example, actually do breathe out of their bellies and, you know, have kind of a natural respiration stuff. Somehow we seem to lose that as we get more occupied in the world.
Yeah.
Our bellies don't want to, we don't want our bellies to look bigger. That's why.
That's the royal we.
Yeah, so we use controlled breathing and progressive muscle relaxation as well. Those are the two main techniques. I also do the counting to 10, but a little bit more... sophisticated than just regular counting to 10. I like for them to close their eyes, imagine the numbers in their head, and maybe even paint them a different color.
Can you give us like a piece of the counting to 10 voice?
Just like the nice jacket that you're wearing right now,
there
different colors and things like that. That's what I like the children to imagine, so they could focus and concentrate.
Oh, there you go. So you give them visual images,
right? Yes. Visualization, and of course I like to. Explore what current relaxation techniques they're using, not specific interventions, but what they do just to relax and to calm down whenever they're feeling anxious or scared or things like that.
Now, do the kids already kind of automatically know when to apply this, or do you have to kind of teach them to catch it before
catch
it gets
it,
like really
to catch
big?
It, to recognize, you know, when there's a change in their emotions or even in their behaviors and to implement.
So you're really kind of almost looking for triggers and stuff, huh?
In a way, yes.
So what situations does this reaction occur, or when is it most impairing, or when does it really get in the way of what you're trying to do?
Right. Yeah, I basically tell them that whenever there's a change in their emotional reactions, to implement them right away, as soon as that emotion is present, you know, so that it becomes easier to calm down and get back to a normal state.
What is the primary fear, or what's the emotion? Anger?
It could be fear, anger, anxiety, nervousness.
Mm-hmm. So whenever you're kind of feeling that, just grab yourself, take that deep breath.
Right. And we use a lot of analogies, too, because I think that's very important in therapy. So that it makes it more comprehensible for clients, you know, to grasp and things like that. So after the relaxation stage, we use affect modulation for them, the clients, to recognize the type of emotion that they're having, how to identify their feelings in themselves, and also to regulate their emotions by using other interventions that we also teach them. Like, for example, thought stopping. If they have a recurrent thought that doesn't help the situation, that even worsens the situation, mm-hmm. that's very inaccurate, you know, we help them to recognize that that negative thought and we use like thought stopping, like imagine a stop sign or think of something positive, think happy thoughts.
I had a really good question to ask you, Oscar.
But it stopped.
337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about, we're here with Oscar Aguilar. He's walking us through the trauma-focused cognitive behavioral techniques that they use with children. Mm-hmm. So you can actually really, I'm kind of go back to thought. You can literally stop a thought that's occurring. Something that, you know, once you notice it and realize it and determine that
specific technique,
you don't like it.
Specific technique you can.
So this isn't a helpful thought I'm having. So
what happens if that doesn't work? Because this is a prevention and early intervention. Do you refer them for more intensive treatment, or?
I don't think we've ever had a case like that, unless there's something else going on, mm-hmm. like maybe ADHD symptoms or some other significant
event. How common is that, where there's multiple stuff going on? Is that something you see frequently, or is it typically single episodes?
Yeah, single episodes primarily.
Okay.
Yeah, very rare cases that there's multiple stressors going on.
Okay. That's so I still got that stop sign in my head.
I know, huh?
How quickly do kids pick up something like thought stopping? Is that something that they just grab a hold? I mean, well, because my kid doesn't drive, so the whole stop sign thing maybe it's not as, you know, for
you'd
me
be
a
surprised.
Stop sign is like
you'd
totally
be surprised, Scott. Some children do are aware of like stop signs and mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah, because of the cross lady.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the cross guard and things like that.
Imagine the crossing guard in your head walking out with a stop sign.
I know.
Yeah. And plus we also like to have them draw the interventions, write down the interventions if they're capable of doing that. So
that
that's another way.
Sounds like
that
might help the learning just right. by giving it mm-hmm. a different.
Right. So in the affect modulation stage, there's thought stopping, there's positive self-talk.
So they go home and try it for a week or so, and then come back.
Yeah,
and tell
we tell
you
them
works.
To practice. We tell them to practice, and then when they are faced with an inaccurate thought or with a negative emotion, that they could be ready to implement.
So in a way, therapy is kind of like school, where you're teaching the lesson, and then they go home and do some homework on that lesson.
Right, definitely, that's a very important.
And so, component. So parents need to, the same way that parents support kids doing homework in school.
Right.
They'd have to support the homework in therapy. Huh?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. We ask the parents to participate in that process. It's very important.
So they come back yeah. and say, Oscar, do the thought stopping was crazy
what about,
off the hook.
What about, do you also help the teachers? Because, you know, kids spend most of their day with teachers. Well,
not really. We don't really involve the teachers. It's just the client and the parents primarily.
So hopefully the parents will go back to the teachers.
Because we do have a case manager. The case manager is probably the one that provides all the contacts with the teacher.
Now, is there data gathered from the school site to see if it's, like, quote-unquote working or not? I mean, so, for example, if the kid who was traumatized was, like, you know, started failing their classes, are you able to kind of check and say, oh, look, they're doing better in school now?
I think overall, yeah, with the feedback that we get from either the client, the parent, or even the teachers.
Okay. It's progressing as the treatment's going, you know, it progresses. How many sessions do they have?
Well, it's up to 12 sessions, maybe even more, just depending on the severity of the case
mm-hmm.
and how much the child has learned. But it's typically around 12 sessions. Because after the affect modulation stage, there's cognitive coping,
mm-hmm.
where we teach the cognitive triangle, you know, the interaction between thoughts, feelings, and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that process is very important.
What? The interaction between who?
Between thoughts, feelings, and behavior.
How's that work?
Because first we have an automatic thought. In a
yeah, mine's a stop sign now. Thanks, Oscar. Deal with that all day.
It's a stop sign with lots of colors.
Yeah, lots of colors. Yeah. So
first we have an automatic thought.
Yes. And those automatic thoughts they affect the way that we feel.
So thoughts just jump up all the time.
Yes, we have thoughts
like a stream
going on all the time.
Like
boom, boom.
A thought automatic thought: I'm ugly.
I need to pay my bills tomorrow morning.
No, just I'm worthless.
You?
Well, no,
yeah,
I mean, or just, you know, I'm dumb, you know, at school or something.
Right. Yeah, the interaction, thoughts, feelings, and behavior.
Oh, my God, what's Scott going to ask me next?
So the importance of the clients grasping that is so they can recognize.
Being aware that those thoughts are just constantly.
Yeah, that thoughts are going to cause a feeling and that thoughts are going to cause a behavioral reaction.
So when a child says, you know what, I'm dumb, that makes them feel sad, and the behavior is, you know what, I'm not going to do my homework, I'm not going to do the
why
work,
even
what
try?
For,
why
even try?
Yeah, so if we teach the
I'll
client,
never be any good at this.
Yeah.
If we teach the client that process, you know, they could recognize the quality of their thoughts, and a primary component is to change that thought, mm-hmm. to just turn it around, turn it into a positive, helpful
mm-hmm.
thought. That, and that way, the feeling will be positive and the behavior will be positive as well.
So the idea is if you can manage your thought content, then your feelings and behaviors will follow, and,
right.
and everything will be
right.
You know, like Sesame Street or something. Cool.
Yeah, and of course one of the last components is a trauma narrative. it's a trauma narrative where they could express their story, you know, what happened to them, if it was a stress or if it was a traumatic event, if it was any type of abuse, things like that.
But you don't do that until you've preloaded all these skills, basically, sounds like.
These skills beforehand.
So as this trauma narrative emerges, if it needs those skills to help manage it, you've already got those skills.
Yeah, you already have the tools.
Jump in, thought stop, boom.
Right. You already have the tools. And clients have written stories, poems. They like to do drawings as well in that trauma narrative process.
Well, you think of our artistic expression, and you see how frequently people who are really, really wonderful artists who do really compelling work are also fairly troubled. And you kind of get that connection right there. That you know, if you dial your creativity into expressing what you feel inside, you get some real stuff coming out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I've even had a couple of clients in the past couple of years write like songs. So that's pretty expressive as well.
That's good.
Yeah. And I thought that was pretty interesting because, like I said, most kids they'll just write narratives, you know, of what happened, but very few have.
What do you do with a 4-year-old? Do they draw it?
Yeah, 4-year-old is primarily drawings, but some other older children have made drawings as well. You know, I just leave it up to them. You know.
Now, you know, I know as a parent, like one of my, you know, you remember like RoboCop, the primary directive or whatever. I'm like so old. My primary directive as a parent, really honestly, is to protect my child from harm. Right? I mean, seriously, that's like way off the scales on top. So, do you find that parents have difficulty in even acknowledging that they may have inadvertently or even vertently or on purpose or whatever, exposed their kids to this? And now, I mean, is that a hard step for parents to take to acknowledge that their kid is suffering from trauma and by proxy acknowledge that somehow it was either beyond their control or, I mean, do you have to do the same triangle thing with parents, I guess?
Well, most of the interventions that are taught to the client, you know, are provided to the parent as well. And at times I've had some parents that have not recognized, you know, that their own way of managing stressors or that some of the differences that person has had with their particular partner is trickling down and affecting the child. So at times they don't even see that as oh, that's the main problem. No, he's just defiant. Oh, no, he's just lazy or things like that. They just want to put it on the child when in reality it's cause of the parental.
I mean, so let's say I have an earthquake kid, right? And I have a kid who was really impacted by the earthquake. And I take them in to see you, and as in the course of going through your initial sessions, I begin to realize as a parent, oh man, the reason that they tripped out on the earthquake is because I tripped out on the earthquake.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
You know, and then now you get a little shame thing, and now you got a, you know,
maybe even guilt.
Do you have to fight through that stuff?
Oh yeah,
separation. You know, it's okay. Imagine the parent feel what they're feeling.
Yeah, and that's where the psychoeducation component comes in. With the parents.
There's some things you can't avoid. Earthquakes.
Are unavoidable. Definitely. Some things are unavoidable.
So for parents or for teachers or school administrators who now after hearing this show on the podcast on KXLRadio.com, if you missed it today, have noticed children whose performance has changed, who are acting differently, who may be having a reaction to some stress or some traumatic event in their life, who do they call? Who do they contact? How do they hook you up with you, Oscar?
Well, if they don't have referral forms already, Scott, they could call us at 339.
So they need to go look for the referral form first.
They could call us at 339-6821 or 6822.
And if they say they heard it on Let's Talk About It, you'll give them a free cognitive triangle?
No, you'll give them good treatment. Good quality treatment.
Yeah, definitely.
And thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you.
How was it for you?
Great.
What are your thoughts about this experience?
I'll go off air for that, Scott.
Well, we're going to look at your performance next week or so, and if we see that this was impactful, we'll come back and talk a little bit.
Sure, definitely.
Stop sign. Rainbow, beautiful rainbow stop
sign. I know, the rainbow. Can't go. Oh, reminder to a community this Friday. The Family Treehouse is selling barbacoa plates, four for $25. So, and that's to raise funds for the Family Treehouse, which is a good, excellent service. It's a community service. It's a place where, you know, parents and children can go 0 to 5, and spend some quality time.
So that's this Saturday?
This Friday.
Friday, October 28th?
It's October 28th,
tomorrow.
Yes.
Let's say.
It's tomorrow.
Family Treehouse, $25. Tell them you heard about it and let's talk about it.
And it's 4 plates.
And they will give you 4 plates of barbacoa.
With $25.
Yes.
Let's not forget that. It's for the benefit of the treehouse.
That's a bargain.
There you go.
And it's really good.
I just want to make another announcement. IBC is having a pumpkin patch thing. That's today and tomorrow. So if you guys want to take your family down there, I know they're going to have the corn maze and all that good Halloween stuff, food. So head down to IBC.
The weather's nice. Time
Yay.
To go out and play.
I think it's the agricultural club that's putting that on. So big
good
ups
family.
To them. Big
yes.
ups to them.
Kudos.
You together.
Yes, it's good quality fun with your whole family.
Yeah. And thus we've reached the end of another Let's Talk About It episode. Thank you to our executive producer, Mario Espinoza, Maria Wyatt over on Mike Left.
Yay.
I'm on Mike Central, and Oscar Aguilar over on Mike Right. Join us again next week.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.